Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to Outward, Slate's podcast about queer living, laughing, loving, and all those other L words, especially the L word. I'm Brian Lauder, an editor at Slate, and on this week's show, we're going to be talking about a project that I've long admired and think is just one of the coolest ideas in the world, because it does indeed kind of involve the whole world. Queering the Map, which launched in 2017, is an online initiative built around queer cartography, the notion that we can map space with our personal queer experiences. That might sound a little highfalutin, but just think about it. Where was the house party where you had your first gay kiss? The intersection where you started nervously coming out to a parent or friend? The cafe where you got a text about the loss of a queer elder? The shop mirror where you first experienced gender euphoria? With Queering the Map, you can drop a pin on all of these special points in space and share those stories with others. And once you see that beautiful globe overflowing with hundreds of thousands of moments of queer joy, sorrow, and everything in between in 28 different languages, you can't help but feel the truth of the slogan that the queers, we are everywhere. We'll be right back with a conversation about Queering the Map just after this message.
Warmer, sunnier days are calling. Fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. Meet your wellness goals in time for summer thanks to the menu of chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great-tasting meals. Listeners probably know that I'm a big home cook, and when it comes to delivery services, I have high standards. Safe to say that the meals I got to try from Factor were really good. The ingredients tasted super fresh, the portions were solid, and the flavor combos were delicious. I think my favorite plates that I tried were turkey chili with zucchini and creamy tomato pork chop with cauliflower. There are 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week, so you'll always have new flavors to explore. Head to factormeals.com/outward50 to use code outward50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code outward50 at factormeals.com/outward50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we're back. To help us explore Queering the Map, we're joined today by its founder, Lucas La Rochelle. Lucas is a designer, researcher, writer, and of course, queer cartographer, which I think is the coolest title someone could have. And their work is concerned with queer and trans digital cultures, community-based archiving, and artificial intelligence. Their writing has been published in the Sociological Review, MIT's Immerse, and elsewhere, and their projects have been written about and featured in the New York Times, Time Magazine, Wired, and Vogue, among numerous other publications. I'm so excited to have Lucas on the show today. Lucas, welcome to Outward.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for that beautiful introduction of Queering the Map and myself.
It's my pleasure. It's truly just an amazing project, so I'm excited to talk today. I guess let's just start at the beginning, which for you, and with all good things, starts in Canada, I think. You built Queering the Map as part of a class project in your BFA program, and so I'm curious, just how did that idea come to you, and what did it look like in the beginning, maybe versus what it looks like now?
Definitely. Yeah. I built the first version of Queering the Map as part of a web design class during my BFA. And at the time, I was reading a lot of queer theory in relation to space and was really interested in thinking about places beyond where we usually imagine queer and trans life occurs, places like bars, bookstores, bathhouses, etc., or particular neighborhoods or stretches of streets. Because while I was, you know, I was definitely having formative queer and trans experiences in those locations. A lot of the ones that oriented me more intensely, let's say, happened in smaller, perhaps less quote unquote significant or well understood areas. So places like alleyways, places like this, you know, this place in the middle of the forest where I would meet my first love and we would talk about our relationship and the barriers to its full expression, you know, park benches, Pacific subway trains, these sort of places that were less places as much as they were ephemeral moments that happened to occur in space. And even the lack of a consistent architecture or infrastructure necessarily around that space still felt like they lingered in those places despite the passage of time. And so because I am, I mean, and was at the time learning how to become a web developer and was really interested in generally the internet as a place for queer storytelling, because I grew up in small town Ontario, Canada, the internet was the first place that I found out that there were other people who had experiences similar to mine. And so I was really interested in the internet as a place for queer storytelling. And so what I was thinking about at the time, which was queer and trans space, what I was learning about, which was digital infrastructure, structures and web development, came together, and I built the first version of Queering the Map in 2017. And so the first version of Queering the Map was really just a place that housed my own stories and the stories of my immediate friends in Montreal. And then slowly it started to grow out of Montreal into Toronto. Stories started popping up in Vancouver, then the States, then in Australia. And slowly, I mean, long story short, over the past, I guess, 6-7 years that it's been online, it's grown all across the world. There's 786,000 plus submissions in 28 different languages all across all across the world.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. I love this concept of ephemeral spaces or places, right, that it's not a bar, it's not a community center or whatever. It's these, the space was made sort of by your one's interaction with it, right? I can think of like a dorm room in college where a very specific thing happened to me that's like, that would be on my map, right? But no one else would know that as like a queer space. It's just a space, but it's made queer by our existence in it and sort of the meaning we bring to that. I wanted to ask, so you talked a little bit about how the site started. I was curious if as it went on, you had to change anything about your thinking or approach from sort of what you maybe thought it was going to be at the beginning. And then as all these people start coming on and using it, what changes did you have to make?
Definitely. I mean, there's been multiple and major backend overhauls in order to accommodate the rising amount of traffic. And actually right now I'm getting close to launching a new version of the site with a much more robust backend to handle the amount of traffic that it's receiving, which has just exploded.
We love a robust backend.
We love a robust backend. We love to make them and remake them nonstop, which seems to be the case with Queering the Map. But I think arguably the most important infrastructure change that concerns the front-end experience of the site happened really early on in the project. So in 2018, we added a moderation system because the project was always anonymous. And that was always a really important part, which means that there's no user profiles attached to any of the points. So there's no identifying user information that's attached to any of the posts made on Queering the Map, not even on our end in the back end.
Which matters, of course, for, you know, people in, well, in various parts of the world, including the US at this point, where that could be dangerous, right?
Totally. Exactly. Yeah. And so that was always super important. But the moderation panel was added because, you know, very quickly as it started to gain traction outside of my immediate communities, so too came, you know, various spam posts, various, you know, attacks on the project, both on a technical level and then just on the posts themselves. And so in 2018, we added the moderation panel, which meant that every post that is submitted is read by a human moderator. Famously means that it takes a very long time to get a post approved on Queering the Map because it's all done through human labor to ensure that there's no hate speech, spam, and particularly any breaches of anonymity. So no first name, last name, no phone numbers, no exact addresses, no email addresses, social media handles, etc. Anything that could be used to breach someone's anonymity. And that's a really critical part of the project in terms of maintaining its safety as well. Yeah, as ensuring, I mean, there's a human aspect to the fact that every single story on Queering the Map has been read by another human being. Rather, once it's been moderated, of course, rather than it just being, you know, mass moderated through some sort of AI system, which famously, when I attempted to, you know, explore using machine learning as a vehicle for moderation, it was a pretty significant failure. Just because of the use of language, it's really hard for an AI to detect, you know, how is the word faggot being used, for example?
Yeah,
is it being used in a way that's, you know, a self-definition, a reclamation of the term, or is it being used as a epithet?
Pejorative.
And because so much, of course, so much of the language on Queering the Map uses these kinds of, you know, slurs or reclamations of language, et cetera, either in describing an experience that's happened to someone or using those terms in a positive claimed way, it wasn't or hasn't been particularly effective to use any sort of machine learning model to assist with this labor of moderation. Yeah, so that's I think been one of the biggest. More sort of that affects the front end user experience. And then it has been, I mean, so I often describe myself as the steward of Queering the Map. I created it, I designed it, I developed the first version and continue to work on it in a developmental capacity as well. But really, most of my labor is around maintenance and infrastructure maintenance and the communications around the project, because it just requires so much upkeep, because everything is moderated, because the infrastructure needs change all of the time. Certain, you know, parts of code become obsolete. And yeah, so it's a big, long labor of love that's undertaken by myself and then a network of volunteer developers and moderators from across the world that help with the maintenance and development of the project.
That's so fascinating. It's interesting to hear about a thing that maybe AI cannot take over, is sort of judging those words. That's, I hadn't thought of that, but that makes complete sense. So we've been talking about the sort of technical side of things. I think it would be a good moment in the conversation now to actually hear some of the stories. We're going to listen to a few of those.
We were partying with everyone for my birthday, and I just looked at you and knew I had to do it. You're the person that made me realize I was a lesbian. And even if we never got into a relationship, I'm glad I can call you my best friend after all those years.
Kingston, Jamaica. Here at high school, I learned the meaning of queer community. So many queer girls figuring it out together, supporting each other through the homophobia. So many crushes, so many laughs, so much queer joy. We created love and acceptance for ourselves at an institution that literally threatened to rip it from us any way they could. That taught me the power we have in community.
For the first time, everything clicked. I felt such comfort and happiness lying next to you, drifting asleep. When I think of how I knew I was gay and how much you meant to me, I always look back to this day.
El Zahir, Cairo, Egypt, where I first started to wonder about my sexuality. I also heard of a neighbor who was arrested at a gay cabaret for indecent acts, and of another father killing his son for being gay. So I kept myself hidden for a while longer.
Tianjin, China. My mom kissed a girl here and liked it. Thanks, Mom, for keeping up the family tradition of being as queer as humanly possible.
Do you have, I don't want to say a favorite story because there are too many probably to do that, but maybe a type of story or thing that's been shared on the site that sort of surprised you or that you weren't expecting? You know, I think we expect to read about maybe coming out, maybe first romances, loves, that kind of thing. But is there a kind of story or maybe one that really sticks in your mind as surprising for the platform?
Yeah, I guess I'm not sure if it's necessarily surprising.
Or just striking, you know, striking.
I think the ones that are particularly striking or that I find particularly important in terms of how the platform has grown and how it circulates are stories that reveal the particular socio-political context of a place through first-person narrative. So, I mean, an example of that in recent months has been many of the posts in Gaza and in Palestine, that have spoken to the experience of queer and trans people living under the Israeli occupation and genocide that's unfolding. And so the poignancy of those stories to reveal something very particular about a socio-political context through first-person narrative, to repeat myself, I think are what makes Queering the Map important as a platform for queer storytelling, is that it makes that link very apparent, the relationship between queerness and place, and complexifies it. Because I think it's very easy to, and you know, there's a particular Western vision of the world that imagines, for example, like the West as the only safe place for queer people, and the, you know, global South as a place that's unsafe for queer people. And I think Queering the Map complexifies that sort of binary thinking.
Easy thinking, yeah.
In terms of thinking about, you know, how are, you know, love and connection being found in certain places where we imagine that it's not possible? How is hardship being found in places that we imagine to be, like, you know, good places to be, good and safe places to be queer and trans, like places like Canada or the United States or the United Kingdom? And I think there's, because of the amount of stories, there's a lot of complexity that I think speaks back to that binary way of thinking about how and where queer and trans life unfolds. I think even stories that are in rural places, we tend to imagine you know, that there are no queer people in rural locations. And Queering the Map very much reveals that, you know, there are, in fact, queer people living in rural locations. They are, you know, some of the experiences are awful. Some of them are amazing. Some of them are fine. Some of them are boring. Some of them are funny. So I think it's a very helpful tool or platform for complexifying how we understand how queer and trans people are living and experiencing particular locations. One of the things that I think is also, to use the word, important again about the platform is the variety of storytelling, that there's also, you know, there's a story that will break your heart in a variety of ways, and then there's a completely absurd or hilarious story, and one can encounter them, you know, sometimes geographically side by side in terms of how one's navigating the interface of the map from one click to another. This variety of storytelling that's really all over the place is a really important aspect of the project. Even though it's moderated, there isn't a particular kind of story that we're moderating for. It's really been about following how people are using the platform, and sometimes it's to divulge incredibly moving stories of personal experience, and sometimes it's to, you know, speculate on the existence of queer and trans penguins, as happens a lot on Queering the Map. And I think it's important that those things live simultaneously inside of inside of a queer archive like Queering the Map.
Wish we could hear from those queer penguins. All right, we need to take a short break here, but we will be back with Lucas La Rochelle right after that. And we are back. We've anticipated two of my questions. So I did want to talk about Palestine in particular and the posts that you've been getting from there. You talked a little bit about it already. Can you tell us, tell our listeners, what you're hearing from there? What kinds of stories are being posted from there right now? Because I read up on them and I've been following that, and it has been, you know, heartbreaking doesn't even really begin to describe it, but it's also doing this preservation thing that the project is supposed to do. So maybe just linger on that for a little longer. What are you seeing, particularly from Gaza and from Palestine right now?
Yeah, I mean, I would encourage everyone to look at and read the stories themselves to see what kinds of things people are saying. But I think top line, what the stories are speaking to are the, I mean, and obviously the immense amount of loss and, you know, mass death that the genocide is bringing, and that it is in fact affecting queer and trans people as well. There are also queer and trans Palestinians, and I think there is this sort of, it's an imagination, it's also a very, you know, powerful structural force called pinkwashing, which is the Israeli state's attempt to paint itself as, you know, quote unquote, the only safe place for queer people in the Middle East. And then using that logic as a way of essentially excusing their attacks on Palestine as somehow in line with queer and trans liberation by framing Palestine as a place that is entirely unsafe for queer and trans people, which is not to say that Palestine or Israel is, you know, a fantastic place. But what Queering the Map is revealing, at least in the stories that have been posted there, is that, you know, it's hard to be a queer person anywhere. It's especially hard to be a queer person when your people are
being erased.
And that is the most pressing issue that these stories reveal. And then I think the work that they do in their circulation and the way that they've been circulated is speaking back to these attempts of pinkwashing, to try to frame the genocide of Palestinians as somehow in line with queer liberation, when those two things cannot be. Yeah, I mean, it's fundamentally not true.
Well, that brings me to thinking about, and you mentioned this too, like, what does this mean in a place like, you know, that we think of as quote unquote good for queer people like the United States or Canada? I wanted to ask, like, in the climate that we're seeing here in the United States with, you know, all of the anti-trans legislation, both sort of official legislation and then the social backlash that's happening from that, how frightening it is, how it looks like it's not going to get better anytime soon. What role do you see a project like Queering the Map playing in that climate, right? Because it's easy to get excited about stories of joy and that kind of thing. But we're in a difficult time, a sorrowful time in a lot of ways. And so I'm curious how you see the project, you know, sort of acting in that environment.
Yeah. I mean, I think that ultimately Queering the Map functions as a document, as an archive, and does hold stories, of course, of joy and connection and also of extreme hardship. I think it's why it's important, why history is important, why archives are important, is because of their capacity to document and transmit knowledge across time and across space. And I think this is of course true of the hopeful and joyful stories as well, but I think it's particularly important the stories of sorrow and hardship and structural homophobia and transphobia are documented, because if it's happened before, it can happen again. Yeah, to have a record of that in some capacity, even if it's through first-person narrative, as is often the case on Queering the Map, is extremely important in terms of documenting the present, but also being able to, you know, look back in 10 years and have a better understanding of how a place was at a particular moment in time, so that the kinds of things that are happening presently in the United States, particularly in regards to trans life, are remembered and stopped, hopefully, and not allowed to happen again.
Yeah, and just showing presence also, I think, is important. On that note, I wanted to ask you what you think the future of Queering the Map is. You know, obviously you're doing a lot of work on the sort of back end and maintenance and all of that, so that's exciting. But what about the future of it, the prospect of continuing it, keeps you interested and excited? What are you looking forward to as it continues to grow?
What's always kept me the most excited about Queering the Map is maintaining it, stewarding it, is keeping it as a resource. Somebody emailed me the other day saying that they had posted something on the map when they were a teenager and couldn't find it anymore. And I was like, oh my God, it made me feel old really quickly. And also made me feel, LOL, to use the word proud, but made me feel proud that I've managed to sustain the project for 6 years, and that it's a project that has continued to be used and circulated by people and used in really meaningful ways. And so my interest is really thinking about how to make it a resource on the internet that can stand the test of time. I mean, I think about, you know, if I had this resource when I was 13 living in rural Ontario, how that would have changed how I might have imagined my life.
What was possible to imagine?
Was possible. And I think that is those resources and making those resources freely available on the internet are extremely important. And so it really is, even if it's you know, it's not necessarily the sexiest answer, but it really is the maintenance platform that keeps me excited, because I want it to last, you know, as long as the internet / the human race is around, and maybe even beyond that, so that
can,
you know,
see,
aliens can see. And then maybe, you know, they'll all take up queerness if they're, I mean, I'm sure they're all the aliens are,
you gotta
are
hope
queer
so.
In some capacity.
Yeah, you gotta hope so. Yeah, the concept of stewardship is really lovely to hear you talk about. That's important, and that this resource in particular merits it. And so, you know, I think that's a good place to end. I thank you for doing that work, for stewarding, and also, of course, for creating it, but for maintaining it too, because it's just an incredible, incredible document and resource and just portrait of who we are and where we are. The website for Queering the Map is queeringthemap.com. Our guest today has been Lucas La Rochelle. Lucas, thanks so much for this conversation. It was really lovely.
Thank you so much for having me.
So right now, at the time that this episode's coming out, the Queering the Map website is undergoing some maintenance so that it can continue to be the awesome queer archive that we all deserve. In the meantime, you can go check out previous posts from around the world on their Instagram at Queering the Map.
All right, that is the show for this week. Please send us feedback and topic ideas at outwardpodcast@slate.com or via Facebook or X, that's formerly Twitter, @SlateOutward. Just a reminder, as always, that by joining Slate Plus, you will get ad-free podcasts, extra segments of shows like Working, and you'll never hit a paywall on the Slate site. You'll also get my undying appreciation for supporting my little magazine. To learn more about that, go to slate.com/outwardplus. Our show was produced by the luminous Paula Shaw. If you like Outward, please subscribe in your podcast app, tell your friends about it, and rate and review the show so other people can join in with us. Until next week, stay gay, everybody.